I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
They tried to stop us from making the podcast that you're about to hear. They felt that you couldn't handle the truth. They threatened us. They tried to intimidate us. They tried to shut us down. They almost succeeded. But Claire and I wouldn't let that happen. Today's podcast is about Unplanned. It's a film. It opens on about 60 screens in Canada today. It tells a fictionalized version of the story of Abby Johnson, who is a Planned Parenthood volunteer who became an anti-abortion activist. As you may imagine, this film has become a flashpoint in the ongoing abortion debate. So you can see why a podcast discussing that film might be subject to protests and legal battles and have to fight like hell just to get aired. No, that's a total lie. There was as much preventing us from releasing this podcast as there was preventing the distributor of Unplanned from releasing that film. But it's better for business, for both of us, if it seems to you like listening or watching is a free speech issue. So I figured we would take a page out of their book and claim censorship. Why is that strategy so effective? How frequently has it been utilized in the long history of cinema? And why do we all still fall for it, even when it's obvious that we are being cynically provoked? So no, we are not really talking about Unplanned today. We are talking about why we're talking about it, even though we know no good will come of it. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Norm Willner is the senior film writer for Now Magazine. He is also the host of a podcast called Someone Else's Movie, which is the newest member of the Frequency Podcast Network as of today. Hi, Norm.
Hi. This is cool.
Welcome to the family.
Thank you. I've liked this podcast for a year now, so it's kind of weird and fun to be part of it. I'm quite excited.
We are delighted to have you, and you're going to tell us today, and I want you to start with the general theme, but tell me about studios using controversy and allegations of censorship to market their films. How unusual is this practice? How far does it go back?
It goes back decades. When I was thinking about the most vivid example, there was a producer in the 50s named William Castle who would market his horror films by saying, we can't show you. We can't tell you. We can't tell you what's so scary about it. When he released a film on basically the drive-in circuit, the B-movie circuit in 1958 called Macabre, which was just about murders and wasn't particularly scary.
Right.
He gave out a life insurance policy to everyone who attended to take care of their burial and give their family $1,000 if the movie scared them to death. And obviously, he never had to pay it, and he knew it, and it cost, 2 cents to print a roll of those things in the 50s. But it was a brilliant marketing scheme because that was the movie where it could scare you to death. And it's just the idea that there is something out there that is so disturbing that you're not allowed to see it. That's how you market something that maybe isn't that disturbing or that relevant.
What does that mean for theaters today in Canada? I guess not many of them, but certainly some of them.
It's about 60, I think, that 60 screens are playing on Unplanned. It's a 24 Landmark and Cineplex theaters across the country, generally one per city. It was booked by a distributor based in the Maritimes, and it was teased for a while, I think is the best way to put it. The film opened in the States in March, the end of March, and in May, the producers brought it to Canada, specifically to Ottawa, for the March for Life at Parliament Hill, and they brought Abby Johnson, who is the woman who wrote the book on which it is based. It's a memoir that is now a fictionalized film, and she showed it for a bunch of friendlies. She showed it to the March for Life people. She showed it to some of the marchers, I believe, and a number of conservative members of parliament who immediately started tweeting about how Canada needs to see this film and why can't we have it right now? And the answer was because they hadn't set up a distribution plan for it yet. They just hadn't done that yet.
There was nothing preventing them from releasing it in Canada back in two months ago.
It may not have been submitted to the ratings boards at that point. I don't know what that history is.
But nobody was standing in its way.
No. A film can be released in Canada so long as it has been rated by whichever provincial board it wants to be released in the province of. I think that's a tortured sentence, but Yeah. That's it. You submit it to the appropriate agencies, you get a rating, and your distributor puts it in theaters. And the theaters will book it because that's how that works. You will not get a 1,200 screen release because Cineplex is busy with The Avengers or Aladdin or right now The Lion King or whatever else is going on. But you will, you can put a movie in theaters yourself. You can pay money yourself. And obviously the distributor in this case, the American distributor, PureFlix, was gambling that the controversy in Canada would lead to a larger demand for the film. And so they could book it into, they were hoping for 100 to 200 screens, according to an interview they gave last month to a right-wing newspaper or website. And they didn't get that. So the interest just presumably wasn't there. But it's opening, and there was never any impediment, legal or otherwise, from the government. There were never any challenges. They could have released it in May if they wanted to. They could have released it in March if they wanted to. But this way, they get to ride into theaters as martyrs, as fighting for the cause of this anti-abortion message that they have in the movie.
So yeah, why is censorship even a part of this discussion if there was nothing in its way?
It's, what do they call it? Waving the bloody shirt? It was an old revolutionary term where you would just wave something to just look at this. The House Un-American Activities Commission in the 50s in America, people would wave look at all these telegrams, these empty sheets of paper. Look at all these telegrams from people supporting us. Donald Trump fairly recently posed with a whole bunch of empty binders to signify his commitment to whatever policy that was. And we know they were empty because he was dumb enough to let photographers get close to them, and we could all see that there was nothing in there. It's a prop. It's a shibboleth, to use an old phrase that I think my grandfather liked. It's something you can wave around and make people angry about, but it doesn't have to be real. There's a monster in the woods. Don't worry. I saw it. It won't let me release my movie. But the movie is there is no impediment to releasing this film, and there never was.
In that sense, did they achieve their goals? You wrote about this.
Yeah.
And now Toronto, other people wrote about it. You're on the podcast right now.
This is the third long-form interview I've given about it in 3 days, which is just ridiculous. And every time I say, do we really have to? Because nobody wins. That's the thing. Like, everybody gets played in these things. If we talk about it, we're giving them publicity. If we talk about it as a controversy, we give them even more publicity because this is exactly what a movie like this needs to thrive. The people who need to see this need to see it because either it affirms their beliefs and they don't see a lot of entertainment that does, or because they have been convinced that it's a crusade to go and see this film, to be brave and go and see a movie and pay $12 or $15 is to support the cause. And the cause in this case is restricting women's rights and rolling back laws and demolishing health care and further tarring Planned Parenthood with this stigma of, I think in the film it's presented as an evil corporation that lies about its nonprofit status in order to procure more abortions or to give more abortions, to perform them. And I mean, I support a number of causes. I don't think Planned Parenthood does that. I think if there was demonstrable proof, then they would have gone out of business in the Bush years because that was a thing for Bush. You can always say, oh, I couldn't tell you the real thing. I couldn't show you the real truth. And then you just leave it open, and other people who are maybe not the most discerning or are only looking for things that reinforce what they already believe will glom onto that.
So what happens to the culture in general, I guess specifically entertainment and film, but our popular culture in general, when a film like this comes out and becomes, to your point, a rallying point for one group and an opposition focal point for another?
Nothing. I mean, as I've experienced it over and over again, nothing will change. No one's perspective is going to be altered by the release of this movie or by the experience of seeing it. Nobody's going to go see it, I expect, who doesn't already believe in its message. And no one will come away from it who does believe not believing.
So why are we talking about it?
Because they played us. Because they managed to get this across. They managed to build up enough controversy. They managed to manufacture enough controversy about a controversy that everyone starts saying, well, what's the controversy? And then you have to unpack it. And unpacking it requires discussing the film. And then they will use a piece of this to make it sound as though somehow we're evil. That's what happens. And the problem is for journalists with a sense of, I hate to say fairness, integrity, all those things that don't count anymore, but people who believe in telling the truth to their readers or their audience will always fall for this because we have to. It's like the joke about someone being wrong on the internet. You have to respond.
Right.
Only in this case, it's a lie. It's an actual factual mistruth that there was ever censorship. The government is the only entity that can censor. Right? I mean, that is the definition of censorship. Never a thing. But if you believe that Justin Trudeau and his liberals are evil and out to slaughter more babies, well, of course they would censor a film like this. That must be why it hasn't come out yet. And all those other reasons are just lies, too.
What do they say to convince people that there is censorship at play? How do they manage to make people believe that something's stopping this movie from coming out when it's clearly coming out?
I think it's just the whisper campaign. I think it's simply the we couldn't show – well, that's it too, right? They've moved the goalpost now that a 60-screen release, which is – I think piddly is a good word, is a triumph because it's coming out at all, because it took this long. Look how hard we must have fought to get it into this many screens.
Because it's so many months later than in America. So there must have been hurdles to cross in that time.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. Really, all they did was wait for the March for Life so they could screen it at a visible point in Canadian anti-abortion activity, get a lot of people on board, and then they probably screwed something up that couldn't have got it in theaters faster. I don't know. Maybe they always planned to go up against Stuber. I don't know.
They picked a weak weekend in the summer.
It is
so
a quiet
weekend. It
would
be a real blockbuster.
But it's also a weekend where there wasn't a lot of competition where they could get screens, right? Because
right.
Stuber's opening wasn't so big as to overshadow everything. There were screens available. Not a lot. And I think Ellis Jacob's statement is very clear that we gave them the bare minimum. But I kind of agree with his position. You can't say no because then they're right. If you do refuse to screen the film, you are responsible for it not screening. You are the monster that clamped down against the little movie. Now, the little movie may not say anything that reasonable people want to hear, but I still believe that sunlight is the best disinfectant, which is why I'm talking about it now, which is, of course, why we're talking about this movie and giving it more publicity. We got played. And it's all because we cannot abide the idea that this thing would get out there on its own terms.
And you mentioned that after we get played and have this discussion, someone somewhere is going to selectively quote from it and prove that we're evil. Has that happened to you?
Only recently, just in terms of this one, only in terms of bad Twitter responses, a couple of people. There's this person who I don't think is actually a human being because she claims to be a grandmother of three who is staunchly pro-life, but she's only ever tweeted to me in the 5 years she's been on Twitter. So either she's attacking people on a regular basis and deleting the tweets or whatever. No, it has not affected me in any real way, but I'm sure I'm an enemy of the people now in terms of their cause. I got a really snippy response on my blog, of all things, from the, and I quote, Canadian distribution company and film brokerage agency who have the exclusive rights to Unplanned in Canada. Forgive me, as I have never heard of you before now. So what am I supposed to do with that? Ultimately, if they have to answer me directly, they have to engage with what I'm saying, and they can't do that because it's true. Like, I'm not making any of this up. This is all really happening. This is their strategy. This is what happens every time a controversial, generally a controversial religious project makes it into theaters in Canada.
It becomes an ideological battleground.
Absolutely. 10 years ago, maybe 11, there was a film called Expelled with Ben Stein from When Ben Stein's Money, former Nixon administration speechwriter, in which he wandered around academia trying to demonstrate that the push for Darwinism, that the embrace of science and evolution was the evilest thing in the world. The idea was that he wanted – remember the teach the controversy thing?
Yes.
That was his argument. He wanted to teach the controversy on why you have to have evolution acknowledged in academia rather than intelligent design. And why don't people talk about the possibility of God being behind stuff? And maybe panspermia is just as believable and all this other stuff. But it ended up with a scene in which Ben Stein is in Auschwitz with his suit and his sneakers, sitting down with his science buddy, who tells him, literally and with a picture show, that Darwinism led to Hitler, that the Nazi eugenics program was directly related to Charles Darwin, which, I mean, a case could be made that because both are scientifically based theories, although one is a perversion of the other. You could make that connection. But then Ben Stein puts his head in his hands as though he's just realized this for the very first time, and sad music plays, and then we see more footage from Triumph of the Will and Nuremberg, and it's vile. It's vile. And it's all about making sure people understand that there's this movie out there that wants to tell you the truth about how you can't
right.
talk about God in academia. And a couple years later, they fictionalized it into God's Not Dead, which is the same things, and that's from PureFlix, which brings us back to this. But with Expelled, I saw it at a press screening. There were maybe 15 of us there. And then a couple of days later, they held another screening for religious leaders. Charles McVitie, who is a Catholic, I think, or an evangelical advocate in Toronto, was there. And immediately after the screening, he took all of his friends from the screening and they marched across from the Varsity at Bloorin Bay to the ROM and stood outside and shook their fists and were upset about evolution being codified somehow in the Royal Ontario Museum. And it was just a publicity stunt. And
right.
it was cynical and disingenuous and manipulative.
And it worked.
And it, well, I mean, I'm still talking about it, right?
Yeah.
but it worked for their people. Everybody else laughs at them, but then the people they need to see it see that picture on Facebook of their brave pastor standing up and shaking their fists at the Royal Ontario Museum. And boy, yeah, let's keep government out of, I don't know, science. And let's keep science out of the classrooms. And why can't we talk about God? Well, you can. It's just not scientific. And the idea that it is somehow, you know, that Christians are the most persecuted group, which is something that keeps coming up in America right now, because it makes everyone feel like the victim in that way. They don't have to think about the things they're actually responsible for. It just won't stop. And this is the latest iteration of it.
So what happens when the movie opens today? Are there going to be protests outside of some of the theaters?
There is a plan for a protest outside Yonge and Dundas, I think. There was one on Facebook a couple of days ago. I hope they don't do it, because that's just, it's giving the audience what they want. It's giving the filmmakers what they want more than anything else. The movie will probably make a lot, well, not a lot of money. It can't make a lot of money. It's on 60 screens in Canada. It will make some money, because another tactic is that they pre-sell a lot of tickets in blocks to churches. And then there will be people outside the theater for the 6:30 or 7 o'clock show, whatever that is, on Friday night, mm-hmm. handing out these tickets that they bought, because they're hoping to bring people in for a free movie.
Right.
And that way, the movie still gets the money. It's the same way right-wing publishers will order 10,000 or 20,000 copies of their own books.
Yeah, bulk buying Amazon books.
It's exactly the same strategy, although the real money in this case is probably going to be in DVD sales down the line,
right,
for churches and people who will buy this movie at Walmart, or maybe not Walmart, but wherever, Costco. That's what these movies are for. These are films that ultimately you don't go to see them to enjoy them. You go to see them as an act of service.
To join the team.
To show your support, basically, yeah, to wave the flag. And, you know, good for them to do that, but I wish we could all just see them for what they are, rather than pretending that there's some sort of, you know, cultural artifact to be respected.
Well, we could just stop talking about them.
Let's do that.
Right,
Lion
now.
King's not very good. We could talk about The Lion King.
Norm just came from a screening of The Lion King. I only want you to tell me in 1 or 2 minutes what is going on with The Lion King. You don't have to give anything away, but I saw comparisons of the animated version of The Lion King singing Hakuna Matata,
sure,
with the current live-action version of The Lion King, quote-unquote, and the new one looked so dead, and it made me so sad, and I wanted to know if the movie was any different, or if I just saw something bad, or what can't this thing capture that an animation film can?
Character, really. I mean, the problem with photorealistic animals, and we saw this in The Jungle Book a few years ago, also from Jon Favreau, and he's obsessed with this sort of performance environment for storytelling. This is his second straight film for Disney with gigantic CG budgets, because it's photorealistic, but it's not real. Those aren't real animals. There are no real animals. The plates of the savannah are there. They went to Kenya and they photographed a lot of stuff, and they use that as backdrops. But the animals are all digital. They're all computer designed. And because they are trying so hard to look like real lions and warthogs and meerkats and hyenas, they don't have the ability to express emotion the way the cartoons do, or the way a puppet would. And it's just, it's cold and sad and empty. And no disrespect to Billy Eichner, who sings a hell out of Hakuna Matata. He's having a great time. But it's just, it's some animals. I mean, it's indistinguishable from a nature documentary that's been cut to look like The Lion King, which I think would actually be more entertaining because it would be unpredictable.
And real lions.
Yeah, you would have real lions. And you would have, when a real lion eats a wildebeest carcass, its face would be covered with blood. But they can't do that because that might upset children. So there's this little red lip on Scar instead. And why go to the effort of making it look as real as possible if you're not going to treat them like real animals, at least in terms of the physical movement and the fact that they are eating each other? It's very sad. It's very, very disappointing.
Well, thank you for that, Norm.
I'm so sorry.
If you want to hear Norm Willner call all of this 6 months in advance, you can go back to a podcast we did last December when The Lion King trailer first debuted, and it's all there.
No, I just listened to it this afternoon on the way up here. We nailed it. I mean, it's exactly what I thought, what I feared it would be, and I'm disappointed because I didn't want it to be. But
and there's more in the pipeline. Thanks, Norm.
Thanks for having me.
Norm Willner has a day job as the senior film writer for Now Toronto. But mostly, he is the host of Someone Else's Movie, the newest podcast on the Frequency Podcast Network. That was The Big Story. You can find more of them at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can find all of our podcasts, including Norm's, at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. You can subscribe for free and rate us and review us wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple, on Google, on Stitcher, on Spotify. And we would love to hear from you, either at TheBigStoryFPN on Twitter or at Frequency Pods. Claire Brassard is the lead producer of The Big Story. Ryan Clark and Stephanie Phillips are associate producers, and Elisa Nielsen is our digital editor.
And I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll talk Monday.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.